Huge news, Wayfair shoppers. You still have time to score up to 70% off everything home at Wayfair. Ship fast and easy, just in time for the holidays. Shop Wayfair Cyber Week now through December 7th at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Huge news, Wayfair shoppers. There's still time to shop Wayfair's Cyber Week sale. Right now, you can score up to 70% off everything home. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, seasonal decor, and way more. Plus, with Wayfair's fast and easy shipping, everything home comes right to your home, just in time for the holidays. So don't wait. Save up to 70% off during Wayfair's Cyber Week sale. Now through December 7th at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Tick, 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 tick. Yes, it is your Meltdown Monday, and right now there is a chill in the air. I am freezing cold in Manchester, and it's not because of the weather, because the sun is beating down outside, but inside here I can see my own breath, and there is icicles on places there shouldn't be icicles, and that is only one reason. It's our guest today. We're about to start off episode number 14 here at The Meltdown. As always, I'm your Tomcat. I am your host with the most, rocking it here in Manchester, UK. And it is going to be a good, albeit very chilly, chilly day here on The Meltdown. We're going to kick things off with a beautiful little trip to somewhere where I know it's not cold. And if it did, it was like hell froze over. Tucson, Arizona awaits. To my tag team partner, I'm going to reach out for the hot tag. Ladies and gentlemen, your creation of devastation. It's Monday. You know where he is. He's on your airwaves. It's Brian Clark.
What is happening, my man? He is the three-time UK host of the year and Guinness World Record holder. He is the Tomcat of Manchester. So thank you so much for that great interview. And I can see the chill is in the air. I can see some frost around. There you go. You get yourself ready. In the air. Full, so I just want to ask you, obviously, how goes it that fine afternoon in Manchester, Tom? It looks a little chilly.
Apart from the chill that's in the air and the frostbite that I've currently got, I've lost three toes, but apparently, according to Dennis Knight, that's okay. We can keep it. It's been a really good week, man. This has been the culmination for me of 3 weeks, so 21 live events back to back to back to back without a day off. So it is the culmination today to have the wrap everything up in a nice big blue bow as we get ready to welcome our guests. And then you know what happens tomorrow? Day off tomorrow, Brian, day off. But while you've got me at this beginning point, I'd like to send out a massive, very happy special birthday to my mother-in-law, Angela. Happy birthday to you. I'm not going to divulge your age because I want to get to my next birthday. And if I do that, it might not happen. Happy birthday, Ange. Thank you so
happy
much.
Birthday.
For having us.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. Happy yes. birthday. It's been really good. How's your week been, mate? All good? All good in Italy?
It has been great, man. I tell you, I had some great training sessions over the 4th holiday weekend. And we did some more landscaping out here in North Tucson. Beautiful. Put up some palms and a couple of big cactus. Just bit by bit, we were building that landscape. So it was fun, man. A really busy weekend. Probably maybe did a little too much work. But hey, no days off, right? That's
No,
it.
there's no days off. When you are the creation of devastation and you put a nuclear blast at it, there are no days off. Well, I think the time has come. I think the time has come as we are ready to warm this bad boy up just a little bit. Brian, are you ready to welcome the reason why all our listeners are tuning in right now? They've logged on to their YouTube subscriptions. They are checking us out in their ears on their favorite podcast stations. Are you ready to welcome the guest that we have been dying to get on this show and you've hooked it up? Let's welcome him now.
From Tom, listen, I want to get in a couple of quick plugs because there was a massive show over the holiday. When we say we are truly international, we mean it because we deliver Germany, Canada, Japan, and all around the world. Next week, it will be Mexico. We had PCO here, Canada, Germany. We had Alex Wright, Japan. We just had Davey Boy Smith Jr., the Triple Crown champion. So listen, the Meltdown is the place for positive conversation and inside knowledge from legends. So I just want to give a real quick big time shout out to our friend PCO. He's also on episode 4, by the way, and a massive success for Maple Leaf Pro on July 5th in Montreal. Congrats, my friend. PCO, you are still the king of Quebec. You know, Tomcat tells me this every once in a while. I get this little birdie and he tells me of all the things that are going on. And I realize what the Tomcat says is true. Booking ain't easy. So, with that being said, today's special guest is a longtime friend of mine, over 30 years. He is a Valdosta State University graduate with a master's degree in education and a Valdosta State football alum. His pro wrestling championships include NWA Tag Team Champion, two-time TCW Champion, two-time TCW Tag Champion. This guest is also a World Karate Association Champion. And yes, you're asking yourself, can he do it all? Absolutely, because this resume includes an acting career in television and film, and a new movie that we will discuss big time right here on the Meltdown. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome my good friend Ray Glacier Lloyd.
Woo! What's going on, guys? Thanks so much for having me. I'm really, really excited to be here.
That
Awesome,
was an
man.
awesome intro, Brian. I've got to
That
say,
was,
honestly, we
Brian.
can
Thank
wrap
you,
the
man.
show up there, Ray, right?
Yeah,
We're done after
I wanted
that.
to bring you on as my PR man. Oh,
Everything I said is true, baby.
well, yeah, I tell you what, I mean, when you text me about would I be able to come on, I was like, man, listen, whatever I got, if I got anything scheduled, I'm moving it because absolutely I want to
Wow.
come on. And seriously, I just we've been friends for so long, and I couldn't be happier and prouder of you as far as just everything you've done. And I always brag to everybody in the wrestling business how you've really done such an amazing job with your social media out there, and which is a lot of guys from our era, me included, I get overwhelmed a lot by social media, but you have really
Oh.
done such a great job of just continuing to build your brand over the years, which is just really encouraging to see, and fun for me to watch, because just I see you having fun with it,
Thank you.
and it's just great too. I mean, we're very fortunate to have come along during an era when it felt like everybody was watching wrestling, and to be able to still kind of ride that wave, so to speak, and be there and be active and be visible for the wrestling world and the wrestling fans. I just My hat's off to you, buddy. I mean, you do a great job with that, and I couldn't be happier and prouder for you to see your success with all that.
Well, hey man, thank you. And it's work sometimes, but it's fun. And the new with this whole Meltdown series, working with Tom has just made it so much more enjoyable, which is what I was looking for, that right fit. And he is the guy. He's just has made it all happen. And we both do our we work on our specialty, so to speak. You know, we have,
Yeah, I
like I
love
said, we
that.
do our booking and get everything lined up, and there it is. I'm like Bill Watts in Mid-South.
You weren't that book, brother. You weren't that book. Well, this is the one that everybody's been waiting for. They have been waiting for the mashup of Wrath and Glacier. That Blood Runs Cold has come to a full swoop in 2025. But we're going to take a little step back before we get to that spot in WCW. And Brian's going to kick us off with a smorgasbord. Yes, that is word of the show. A smorgasbord of questions and scenarios to put to you, brother. So.
Yes, Ray, we talked a little bit prior to coming on air today, and we were trying to think of the timeline of actually when we met. And I thought about it. I was thinking maybe 1990, 91, 92. Well, before 92, I would say probably 90, definitely on the indies wrestling circuit. But remember, our good friend, Peach State Wrestling, Ben Masters.
Ben Masters.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was it. I mean, I moved to Atlanta in August of 90. So that summer. And I know I started with Peach State, broke in April of 87. I started with R.D. Swain, my tag partner. We started with Peach State probably a year later. So probably around, summer of 88. And then, so somewhere, yeah, it was somewhere between that summer of 88 and that summer of 90. Because I knew we definitely hung out a lot in Atlanta once I moved up there. So it was maybe right before that. But yeah, somewhere in that window, which is, still a long time ago. So we've been great friends for a long time. And man, it's been a ride. It's been a ride.
we have survived it. We are all blessed to have made it. There's no doubt about it. So yeah, man, I was trying to pinpoint that time, and I think it was Peach State with Ben Masters. So big shout out to Ben Masters. We will have to message him and let him know we're thinking about him and saying a big hello. And of course, our good buddy West Blade, we got to say
West
hello.
Blade. Good old West Blade.
Got to give some shout outs to some of our people.
So I remember. Right. I remember when we first met. You were doing the Night Stalker gimmick, the Big Bad Lax. So I don't know when you started that, but I knew that's when we met. You were you had already started that. So
How did you get that gimmick through customs?
Yeah. Oh, I've never had to go through customs. I was on the indie circuit. There was no worry about me going through customs.
Yeah.
At that point, I guess if you can say, I actually got to go to Smoky Mountain with Jim Cornette. So that's about as far as I got.
That's as out there as you need to get, right?
Yeah.
But you know what, Tom? We were very
huge news, Wayfair shoppers. You still have time to score up to 70% off everything home at Wayfair. Ship fast and easy, just in time for the holidays. Shop Wayfair Cyber Week now through December 7th at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Fortunate. We were very fortunate during that time where, independent wrestling was really hot there in Georgia, Alabama, North Florida, Tennessee, Carolinas. So we had enough, there was enough, as far as shows that we could drive, and we stayed about as busy as we wanted to. We never really had to go that far because it was just a real hotbed for wrestling during that time.
Well, that's ideal, and that puts money in pockets, and it creates hot towns and hot territories, and hot is what we need, unless you're Glacier, which is when we need to bring it down and cool it down just a little bit. But I'm sure there have been some stories from you two and the crew over the early years that are not safe for work. So let's keep it rolling. We're a positive show. Let's keep it all fresh. And I'm sure if down the line we get to the point of it, we might do a Meltdown Extra. Unrated, but that might come down the line. We'll get back in touch with Ray later on. But let's get into it now that you guys have literally broken the ice, no pun intended, and let's talk about WCW. Tell us a little bit about meeting Eric Bischoff and the first stepping stones to what became Glacier, and then I want to probe you two about everybody's favorite gimmick. Blood Runs Cold. So tell us a little bit about the origins first, Ray.
Yeah, you know what? I always say that for one, it didn't happen overnight. I'm amazed out when people break into professional wrestling. For some reason, it's just like it seems to be the kind of norm these days. Like if their big break doesn't happen in about 3 years or so, they kind of start to become bitter towards the business. And I always tell people, like, my goal was never to become a bitter old wrestler because there was enough bitter people in the world, and I don't want to be another one of those. But But it was fun for me. I broke in April of 87. I decided I needed to move to Atlanta to pursue wrestling because wrestling wasn't going to come to Valdosta, Georgia and find me. I knew that. So I made that move to Atlanta, but still my break didn't come till January of 96. So, practically almost 6 years later. So patience was a big part of it, but along the way, all the independent wrestling we were doing, meeting great friends like Brian, and our buddy, Chris Blade, West Blade, as we call him, that was what made it fun. It was a lot of fun. It really was. It was a lot of hard work. And I firmly believe that if you go all in on professional wrestling and you do it the right way, it will probably be the hardest thing you ever do physically, mentally, and emotionally. It takes a lot. It'll demand a lot of you. But it gives a lot back too, if you keep the right perspective. And of course I trained in martial arts ever since I was a kid, about 14 or 15 years old. And I stayed active throughout the years, even when I got into wrestling, but I didn't bring a lot of that into the ring because a lot of people at that time weren't very comfortable with you kicking at their head with all these kicks and stuff, So I didn't purposely do a lot of martial arts in my wrestling, when I would get in the ring. So anyway, one of my all-time favorite sayings, probably my number one favorite quote of all time, is it was given to me by my college athletic trainer, a gentleman named Jim Madalino, who's now the head of all the sports medicine at University of Kentucky. He's gone on to be extremely successful, but he was very pivotal in my life in college. And because I had a lot of injuries in college. And so I was like Humpty Dumpty. He kept putting me back together. But he had a great saying. He was taping my ankle one day, and he just said, he always would say to this guy, he would call us his boys. He'd say, "You know what, my boy?" He said, "You ever heard the saying, it's not what you know, it's who you know?" And I said, "Yeah, of course I've heard that." He said, "Well," he goes, "I feel like there's another part of it that makes that even more true." And I said, "Well, what is that?" He said, "It's not always what you know. It's not always who you know. It's who's willing to say they know you, who's willing to put their name and reputation on the line for you, to maybe give you an opportunity, to open up a door for you. But that takes a lot of trust. You have to earn that opportunity for them to do that." And so I became friends with Dallas Page once I moved to Atlanta, and started hanging in the circle of wrestlers there in Atlanta. Lex Luger and Sting owned a gym called Main Event Fitness where we all worked out. And actually, for years, Brian lived like pretty close to Main Event, right down the road from it. And we all were in that general vicinity. So we got in that circle. I met Dallas through I think through Disco Inferno, I think Glenn Gilbernetti. But anyway, Dallas, everybody knows Dallas's legendary work ethic and everything. And so and him and Bischoff were good friends. And so over the years, as we became friends, we hung out a lot more away from wrestling too. And December of 1995, Dallas Page and I were actually Christmas shopping in the one of the big malls there in Atlanta. And we'd stopped to eat at the food court there. We'd stopped to get and we got a pizza. And we're eating. And I said to Dallas, I said, "You know, Dallas, I'm thinking about adding some martial arts to what I do in the ring." And Dallas, with a mouthful of pizza back before he ate gluten-free pizza back then, he said, "Bro, it'd be great if you knew some of that stuff." And I said, "Well, I do, Dallas. I've been studying, ever since I was a kid." And at that time, I just realized I'd never really told Dallas that much about my martial arts training. And so I filled him in on all that. And all of a sudden, he just says, "Well, bro," he said, "Bischoff's into all that stuff." And I said, "Well, I didn't know that." He said, "Give me some information on it. I'm going to relay this to Bischoff." And I'd met Eric a couple of times. I had pitched a couple of ideas, and nothing ever really seemed to impress him. That nothing, not enough for him to make a move on it anyway. But I met him through Dallas. And so, because as those stories are true, they lived about three houses down from each other in the same neighborhood. And so, so he goes and tells Eric, and then Eric tells Dallas, "All right, well, now I'm interested. Let's get through the holidays, schedule a meeting, and I want to meet him for." So, Dallas, we scheduled for me to meet with Eric for dinner, like the first week in April, I mean, January, at the steakhouse right there in their neighborhood. I think it was like a Longhorn Steakhouse or something like that. But so I go in. I'm thinking I'm just going to go have a evening chat with Eric. We sit down at the back of the restaurant because at this point he was already on TV. Nitro had started in like September of 95. So that rocket ship had already taken off. And all I knew was I wanted to find a way on that ship, that rocket ship, And I felt like I was ready at that time in my career. After the last 2 or 3 years leading up to it, I felt like I was really, really ready. I felt like I was good enough to be at that top level. And so we ended up having a dinner meeting that went, as I remember, almost 3 hours, about a good 2.5 hour meeting. And we talked about a lot. And what I realized by talking to Eric and him asking me a lot of questions about the martial arts world, I feel like what he was probably doing was vetting me a little bit. And being that he saw that I knew a lot of the people he was talking about, I actually knew some of the people that he was talking about. We had mutual friends in the industry. I think that really gained me a lot of ground with him. And so anyway, through we come to the end of the dinner, and this is just exactly how it happened. And I always say, you never know how your break's going to happen in pro wrestling. He basically said, "Ray, I like what I hear. I want to sign you to a deal. I want to sign you to a contract with WCW." Yeah, I never, ever thought that would come out of his mouth. And so at the time, I was working with one of my other great friends and mentors, a guy named Chip Smith. Chip was the athletic director of one of the most prestigious country clubs in America called the Atlanta Athletic Club. And I was the fitness director under Chip. So I had a really good job. And I was wrestling as much as I wanted to on the side, but I had a really, really good job. And one that gave me a lot of notoriety, actually, because of that position in this really exclusive, country club. And but he just said, "Are you still wrestling on the independent circuit?" I said, "Yes, I am." He says, "Well, here's what I want you to do. I want to pay you to disappear from the independent wrestling scene. I want you to cancel all your bookings. Just don't tell them why, but just tell them that you need to cancel for now." And he said, "I just want you to disappear." He said, "You don't even have to quit your job right now." He said, "I just, we'll go ahead and get you signed, but I just want you to disappear for a while." And I looked right at him and I said, "I can do that." and that's how it started. And from that point on, I had no idea at that point that Eric basically already had this idea because of the Mortal Kombat game had come out. It was unbelievably popular. The movie had come out. And at that time, which we would all find out later, is the Midway company, who they own the rights to Mortal Kombat and all that, they were at that time in the process of starting to develop the Mortal Kombat TV series would be on TNT, and which Brian had played an episode of that. So that's where it all began. And I had no idea that going into this dinner meeting, my whole life was about to change, and it really did. And then the rest of the story kind of goes from there.
It changed with the Sub-Zero Blast, right?
Yes, honestly, it did.
It really did. It went from there to there in one dinner meeting. And that is how quick things can change in a life from a positive standpoint. So on that basis, obviously, you've been and you've met with Eric and you've discussed everything and you found that beautiful, harmonious spot where he's going to sign you, and he's giving you time off, and he's paid time off. Who doesn't like paid time off, right? Where does the layout start to begin? So the vignette started airing, I believe, in like April 96, and you made your debut in like the September of 96.
Right, right. Took a while.
Was it held off until you had your foils in place as well? Because obviously you were portraying the baby side face of the storyline, and then you had Brian and Mortis, Chris Canyon on the other side, and then we were to add Ernest Miller in there. Was it on a basis that you were held back because you needed to have those foils introduced at the same time? Talk to us a little bit about that. And Brian, sure. I want you to dive in on there as well as to what you remember from your early stages of conversations with Eric.
Yeah, just a quick kind of to give a quick summary of that is, we really did jump in immediately, though. Even though I was working my other job, we were putting in full-time hours because Chris Canyon came on board as a second person. Eventually, Jim Mitchell would be brought on to manage Canyon as Mortis, as James Vandenberg. Brian came in pretty fast, which obviously would eventually become Wrath. And then Ernest Miller came in. Ernest was brought in because he was teaching karate lessons to Bischoff's kids, Garrett and the sister, I forget her name, and so that's kind of how he got brought in. And actually, we really went to work immediately because that was the deal. Dallas had put his name on the line for me, there were serious expectations that came along with that. Like, one, I had to almost immediately start going to training at the power plant, I pretty much, left my job as quick as I could. I resigned on good terms there, and of course, Chip wished me the best. He knew this was my dream and my goal to get to WCW. And so that was a big thing. Here I was. I had wrestled in Japan. I had a pretty darn good career by my standards to that point, but I was still expected because of that work ethic of Dallas, and that was part of the deal. was to go to the power plant every day and basically elevate my training to the very next level, which I was happy to do. And but I actually had met a young man named Andre Freitas, who was a very, very talented special effects artist, had his own studio. I referred Andre to Eric. They hit it off pretty well. And Eric pretty much immediately hired Andre and his studio and his team to be the ones to actually take the concept from drawing board to finished product, which, of course, I would eventually become Glacier and Mortis and Wrath. And, of course, Ernest kept his real name. So that process started almost immediately. We met all the time. I mean, we were meeting nonstop because it was a I mean, we're talking about, I mean, hundreds of hours of time that we invested to get all of this in order and get it. And it was a process because we had no idea that our names are going to be. We had to whittle down from, we started from probably about 100 plus names for each one of us. And we kept whittling it down till we finally got the names that we felt fit the best. But and this is something I didn't know to be 100% true until just maybe a couple of years ago when I heard Eric talking about this on his podcast, I think, which was, you know, they put the first vignettes out. And then that was around April, as you said. And then around June of that year, this little thing called the NWO happened. So what we would all find out, to, you know, and I think it's hard to think because, you know, that was almost 30 years ago. Hard to remember a lot of specifics. But at some point, we weren't told a lot. As Brian can attest, we were kind of kept out of the loop too a little bit, but we were basically told, hey, we all see what's happening with this NWO when Hogan became the third man and all that. And that just exploded. So the idea was, okay, let's hold off a little bit. Let's give this a little time so that, you know, nothing is having to compete with that, you know, including what we were doing. So that's, as I understand, part of the reason why it was pushed a little bit. And listen, there was no one more ready for me to debut than me. I was ready to get out there. So, but it was just, that was the process at the time. I mean, what we had done had never been done before, where they hired, where that much time and prep had been put into presenting these personas that we would be. That one thing had never been done. And then nothing had ever taken off so fast and so big as the NWO, which just, you know, as luck would have it, happened during that same prep time of our gimmick. So yeah, it was kind of a blessing and a curse to kind of be in the middle of all that.
Who would have known? Who would have known?
Who would have known?
Your vignettes started debuting in April. Hall and Nash hadn't even signed with WCW. So who knew that those three letters would become so synonymous with epic storyline that pro wrestling has ever seen? Blood runs cold. Incredible. Now I want to buy over to Brighton and see what your memories are of it, brother. So talk to us about meeting with Eric. Obviously, you've come from the WWF as Adam Bomb. You're going to embrace the character of Wrath. You're going to be, as we've just said, the foil to Glacier's babyface. And you're going to portray the big demonic, satanic, axe wielding, taking it back to the Ox Baker days heel. There we go. Talk to us about it.
Yeah, Ray is right on point as far as how much time and effort we put into each character. As far as we come up with our names, we whittled it down to what would work best for each character, our look. Also, the amount of time we spent at the power plant training for this. We were trying to bring Mortal Kombat to life through us. And so I'm almost positive, I cannot remember the guy's name, but Ray had us set up a dojo also in Atlanta.
Yeah, so
we would go, we were not only getting in-ring training, plus our weight training, plus everything else, any other type of training we were doing, we also had Ray had us set up with one of his karate studios, a dojo. So we would even get more experience to connect pro wrestling and martial arts and try to bring it to life. Wow. So that's a lot of the things that I remember. I remember spending a lot of time in the dojo, which I'd never, you know, been there before. And of course, Ray being a veteran at it really helped us get our foot in that door. And I know that we were training down there. Of course, Ernest is a world champion karate expert, but Ray was great at it. And myself and Canyon were really new at it. But I really enjoyed the kickboxing aspect of it. I felt like I got really proficient at that considering my size. So I did enjoy that a lot. I do remember the gentleman that was head of the studio. I was doing really well with the judo portion of it. He even pulled me aside. He was like, hey, maybe we should have you do the state games 1 year. I'm like, wait a minute. No offense, my man. I appreciate it, but I'm under contract with Eric and TBS and Turner. So can you imagine me getting injured in a state judo tournament? So that didn't happen. But either way, my point being is that we really put a lot of time and effort into each character. And Ray is right. We worked on it constantly. Even though we were not on TV, there was a ton of work going into behind the scenes, a ton, including all our visits, even with the design team.
Yes.
There was a Hall of Fame design team, the HOF place that Ray and I would always go to and get all our gear made. So it was each day we would meet and say, okay, this looks good. That'll work. And we had so much input on the characters, a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
So many hours put into a gimmick that just lives in infamy, honestly. People are still talking about it nearly 30 years on. But so much in terms of the presentation, as you just highlighted. Everything from Glacier's entrance, from the snow coming down, to the costumes. That was a costly exercise. That was a lot of investment in WWE, right?
I always say, I think Andre Frieda has made more money than all of us. but you know, that's where it was going to reinforce to us, and I know, you know, Brian can vouch for me on this too, is that's where I really, really knew the commitment that Eric had to this, is because when Andre presented the invoice just for my gimmick, I think it was $35,000, and which in the wrestling term, when the wrestling world hears that, they're like, oh my God, you know, whatever. And there's always the critics who will say, you know, they didn't like any of this, which is fine, because you know you're going to get that in our world. Some people are going to love what you do. Some people are not going to love it. And that's fine. But when you look at someone like Andre, had already made a pretty good name. He'd worked on some pretty big films already. You know, and I've learned going into the TV and film industry, and I know Brian has too. I tell you what, anybody working in that industry at that level, they command a good price for their services. And Andre was no exception. And so, but he gave a lot of really professional work for that. I mean, this was the first time ever in wrestling where they had gone to this level, where they've gone outside the wrestling world to have someone come in and design, you know, not only the persona, but the everything from head to toe, what our look would be. And it'd be this very professional look, not something like it was made in somebody's garage, you know? And here's a great thing about it too, that I know that we had a lot of fun with. You got to understand, this was early 96. So this is, you know, the internet was still in its infancy. So we were able to keep a lot of stuff under wraps a lot easier at that time than you could today. So we had a lot of fun with that. We really did. And because people were starting to speculate, you know, once things started trickling out, who Glacier was going to be and this and that and blah, blah, blah. So we had a lot of fun with that. But at the end of the day, you know, really, the hours that we put into to working on creating, not only, like you said, I'll say with Canyon and Brian, what I always said to them was, that's when I learned, and obviously Brian and I had known each other for a while. I'd gotten to know Canyon through this, is I really got to know how coachable Brian and Canyon were when we took the into the dojo, into the classes, because learning any style of martial arts is not easy in the beginning. And they picked it up so incredibly fast. And then I want to compliment Ernest. Ernest picked up being in the ring at the power plant. He picked that up a lot faster than any of us expected, because he was, you know, very coachable in that sense. But the one thing that we did not have, Tom, that I think obviously you would have today, there was no creative team, no one was helping us with this, that, you know, in the office at WCW. And I mean, no one. I mean, Dallas was kind of overseeing it, but it was 100% on us to make all this, to get the steer this ship, because no one at the office, they didn't even know what we were doing with it. No, I don't think anybody wanted, they didn't want to be a part. They were like, no, you guys wanted this, you figure it out, you know. So yeah, it was a huge, huge undertaking at that time. To whereas now I think you'd have a whole supporting cast of people helping. We didn't have that. We had to come up with the backstories of each one of these characters and personas so it made sense, and that there was a reason why individually they made sense, and then as a group, all this made sense. And it was a ton of work, a ton of work. I say we proudly put in the time for it, and we did. We would go to the power plant. We would train. We'd meet with Andre. We'd go to the gym. Then we'd usually videotape our matches, and we would meet either over at Brian's apartment or Canyon's apartment. We'd watch the videos back up until late into the night, and then we'd get up and go do it again, you know, every day of the week at the power plant.
So you guys are basically one half of an epic fivesome. So there's the two of you, there's Ernest, there's Canyon, and there's James Mitchell. There's certainly got to be some stories from the five of you. Are there any that are safe that we can share on air, boys?
I don't know. There were some, you know, we always had fun. I can say that
we
much.
Fun. We really did. We did.
Even like Ray said, of all the work that we put into this, we were sort of an island. We were sort of just out there, and we did have to come up with like the backstory, why these characters were, you know, getting into the feud. What was the whole backstory? So that was a whole process of something that we all would meet on. Like I said, we would have meetings, whether it be at a restaurant, one of our places with our friends. We would all just constantly, and even if we weren't even involved in a pay-per-view, we would watch every single one
Everything.
To see where we could fit in, what would work for us, where would this group of guys fit in best. So yeah, a lot of work, but I really enjoyed it. It was a great time, and we had a blast. We really did.
It was a lot of fun, and the thing was that, you know, with I remember we used to have what we eventually coined the midnight meetings with, because Eric would want to come to Andre's studio, AFX Studios, and kind of see the progress and kind of just get like an update from all of us, not only what we're doing wrestling wise, but you know, how all the look and everything was coming together. And I always thought that was one of the coolest things, that we would have I wasn't always midnight, but it would be pretty late at night, you know, when Eric would come over, because he didn't want, I think, as I remember, he didn't want anybody knowing that he was, you know, kind of really coming in and helping, you know, like directly like that. I think he thought it was kind of cool that we could have these real late night meetings, and he could kind of get caught up on everything, and then he could kind of covertly come in and out, you know, it was you know, from his corporate position there at the WCW. So, but I do remember that, you know, we were supposed to, I know, Canyon and I were supposed to, as we were understanding, possibly do something on that Bash at the Beach, you know, 96, which was, you know, when Hogan was revealed as the third man. And I remember that Kenny and I got called, I think, that Friday before the pay-per-view, which was on Sunday. And they basically said, don't worry about coming down. And then, of course, on Sunday, we found out why, you know. So, I mean, we were getting antsy. We wanted to get out there, but it was one of those things where it was a process, you know, and we had to kind of we had to respect the process, and that we weren't, we were just, we were just part of the whole, you know, rocket ship. And so we, you know, there was times when we couldn't control that. We kind of get pushed back a little bit, but we got to a point where we all knew we were ready. And that was our thing. We just got to stay on ready, and we'll answer the call as soon as they put us out there. We'll do what we, you know, we're hired to do.
Well, it was serendipitous. It was meant to be. You were riding the crest of the wave for 83 weeks. WCW beat the WWF in the ratings, and you guys were a massive part of that. So a massive round of applause. Even after 30 years, we are still championing you at WCW. And speaking of 30 years, the WWE Vault on YouTube, which is operated by the WWE itself, have actually just uploaded, only a couple of days ago, your epic encounter from the Great American Bash in 1997.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, took on Wrath. So, guys, load up your Google machine, find it on YouTube, and check out the boys absolutely smashing it at the Bash. What a summer encounter. What do you guys remember of that?
My what about one? You know, it was always great when we got to work each other, because, you know, for me, and I feel like Brian, you know, probably feels similar here, is because we had known each other from the independent scene, and we kind of come up together. And you know, it certainly needs to be mentioned that Brian was coming off his huge, huge, you know, wave of success from WWF. You know, it was Adam Bomb, and had come to WCW. So I was super proud of him. I was super happy for him that he had that success. And then now he was coming to WCW, and I was, not only he was there, but I was going to get a chance to work with him. So our matches, they were always really, really great, really great. And but I remember that my one fun thing to remember about that match was when we were outside the ring, and we talked about it. We were going to, I think it was where I was going to go. I was going to throw Gotis O'Brien into the railings, and he reversed it, and I was hit the railing, and it was a time during WCW where we kind of learned, and I can say this safely now, you know, is that we kind of learned it was better to ask for forgiveness and permission on certain things.
That's the way we run our show as well.
So we didn't really. The general kind of standing rule was don't go into the crowd if you hadn't been given the okay. And so anyway, when we did that spot and he reversed it, I hit the railing. I just I just went with it. I went right over the railing into the audience, and Brian jumps over the railing. We have a great fight there in the audience, you know, and we come back over and so that was one of those moments where we kind of had to ask for forgiveness. But, you know, not so much because it worked so well that no one seemed to really mind it afterwards.
Yes, that is true. And the thing is, friends, and then the friends get to work each other. There's that chemistry. It was always that way with Ray. And so I always enjoyed every time we worked, whether it be house shows, TV, wherever we were at. Ray was such a pleasure to work with. And he was smooth as silk, man. He would, if I had a flaw, he would cover it up, man. So Ray, I'll tell you,
same way.
I appreciate you, man. I want to ask you this. Yeah, bro. You know it all the way back to you. Listen, let's talk about just for a second, the art of storytelling in pro wrestling, a little bit of the good versus evil. What we do is our ability to tell the story takes years to learn. And, it's not something that you learn after a few months on the indie scene. You can't be a guy with two left feet and trying to, expect to make it, expect to be successful. You may be an enhancement guy if you're lucky. Okay.
Yeah.
But what my point is that you have to bring something to the table, and you have to be a very good, if not great, athlete. Yes. Okay. So my question for you, Ray, is how long did it take you to be able to tell that story, the psychology of it? How long did it, you think it took you? Years, you would say?
I remember specifically, and we were so fortunate to be able to work it with Ben Masters and Peach State Wrestling early on in our careers, because Ben, who's someone who's still a great friend, Ben, he did a great job of bringing in a lot of really established stars that were kind of, some of them maybe, on the downhill part of their career as far as full time, but they were still amazing, amazing draws. Guys like Bullet Bob Armstrong, Mr. Wrestling Number Two, Bob Orton Jr., Ted and Jerry Oates, all those guys, Big Bubba, Boss Man. I mean, just tons of these veterans who really were great storytellers, And so we got to learn from them. But for me personally, I always say my first two or three years in the business, I literally would say a prayer before I go out every time. Like, please do not let me embarrass myself out there, because I just, it was that, and we were working as much as we wanted to back then. I mean, I could say I was working usually three or four times a week if I wanted to. I mean, and working mostly with Ben or something like connected to that, we had those really good veterans to learn from and to critique our matches, even if it were like me working with someone who was also not that experienced, but you could come to the back and have them say a Bullet Bob Armstrong, watch your match, and they kind of break it down and give you the critique of, this worked, this didn't work, this is why this didn't work. And so, learning from them, because as that old saying goes, we came to an era where it really was, the veterans would say, just, hey, shut up and listen, kid. and you would learn by watching them and them moving us around and teaching us the art of that storytelling. And it's funny how, we always say, now, as a coach at AEW, I've become great friends with Scotty Garland, Scotty Tuhati, and we were just saying this to some of our talent last week at TV. Is like, it's not about the moves; it's about the story. It's like, you got the story takes precedence over the moves, and it's who are you and why should I care about you? But that art of learning that story, I think it's different for everybody just because of who you get exposed to in your career. And I was fortunate enough to get exposed to some really good storytellers early but it took a while. Yeah. I would say I was probably easily into my third or fourth year before I really even felt like I remotely had a handle on how to do that, well, And that's where during that year 5 through 8 is where I felt like I really had honed that. And I really felt confident that I'd gotten a good grasp of it. Yeah. But that year 1 through 4, I was flying by the seat of my pants. I felt like most of the time.
That was part two of my question, but you've answered it, and it does make sense that it was the same for me, is that the veterans in the locker room, those guys, ones that really, I mean, they really are a blessing, but maybe some young talent really don't see it that way, but it's really true, man. You can learn so much. Like, I was lucky enough when I got to go to Smoky Mountain that Mr. Wonderful, Paul Orndorff, took me under his wing, and I learned so much just on road trips from Paul, you know, being able to room with Paul, go work out with Paul, have meals and listen. And of course, Jim Cornette and everybody there, but a locker room of like the Rock and Roll Express, Tim Horner, Tracy Smothers, legends, old school legends, but guys that had already been through what we'd been through 10 times before, but you're right. It's the legends and those people that are the ones that really help you with those steps of psychology, being able to be a storyteller in the ring.
Yeah. And it's like what you said too, just piggybacking off that, is I think a lot of times when younger talent, like this generation, they hear us talk about, oh, we learned, you know, from the legends, from the veterans. I think that they somehow sometimes get this vision of that they sat down and they said, okay, you know, this is lesson one, lesson two, lesson three. And it wasn't like that. It was so much like you just said, you would get to learn stuff just through the conversations of having riding with people like Paul and them just talking during dinner and on the road, just conversations. They would throw a lesson and sometimes not even realizing they were sharing a lesson with us, you know, or sharing wisdom with us. And because they're just talking about stuff and, you know, conversation triggers something for them to tell a story. And there's a lesson in that story that, they may not even have planned on telling, but just, and that's one thing I say now that I feel is missing is, that those car rides, you know, is being able to ride with veterans and learn that stuff. Because I'm going to sometimes now, if I'm doing an appearance on an indie show or whatever, there may be a locker room where the guy with the most experience has maybe 5 years experience, maybe. The rest of the locker room is, they're all, you know, kind of still wet behind the ears, so to speak. And that's not their fault, but that pecking order is almost going away now. And that's a shame because that really was how lessons got passed on, was those old veterans who maybe were stars, but some of them who were just really those good old workhorse guys who, yes, you know, maybe stayed in the territory, who weren't necessarily a household name, but someone who just really, really knew the game. And they were more than willing to teach us, you know, that game.
Well, as we do here on The Meltdown, let's raise a glass to all those veterans, those legends, those mentors, and those icons that teach the classes of tomorrow and guide the way, paving that road. So to all the coaches, thank you so much. I'm going to raise a glass to my own personal favorite coach. Coach, all right, Buzz Stern, this is for you.
Well, I'll tell you what, I had a lot of fun being Coach Buzz Stern. It was taken from a lot of my experiences from the coaches that I had. And then when I became a teacher and a coach, I created some of my own personalities there that I brought to the table. And, you know, and during that, we had the run with Glacier, which is great for all of us. But everything in wrestling, you know, evolves and kind of moves on. And so when the booking committee changed and we had kind of, I think, we had taken that about as far as I felt like as a group, we were going to take it anyway, you know, and I saw the writing on the wall that they were probably going to want to phase Glacier out. So I went through this whole process of, I hired a friend of mine who was a director, a film director, and brought him to Atlanta. My buddy Vernon Love, Luther Biggs. The original.
I got to get this in here. The original Luther Biggs, the one and only, the original Big Sexy.
That's okay. Right. Absolutely.
Go
That's
ahead,
right.
Ray.
That's right. Yeah, and still, you know, one of my best buddies to this day. He was just hanging out with us for the weekend. But we spent money out of our own pocket to film these vignettes. And they were, I had them, my buddy who's the director went back and got them edited. They were broadcast ready. So when that word came down that they were not going to renew my contract, I just asked for a meeting with Eric. And fortunately, I was able to get one. I went in and I remember he had still had a VHS player and TV in his office. I knew that. So when I went in and I remember him cutting me off, said, "Hey, Ray, I know why you're here. Look, you know, this thing, we got all the miles as Glacier, we felt like we could get out of." I said, "I understand." I said, "Just take a look at this." And he was like, "What is it?" I was like, "Just take a look at it." He puts the VHS tape in back when we still had those. And he stands right there in his office. He never sat down. When he watched it and he hit eject, he put it out and he said, "Okay, you're rehired." And it was literally like that fast. And I said, I'll never even forget him saying that. He goes, "But I can't pay you Glacier money." And I was like, I'm okay. I don't look. I just want to be on the team, you know. And the funny thing is, as how WCW was run, when I got my first check, you know, under the new contract, I don't even know if I immediately signed a new contract. I think it was a while before I actually got the new contract. But I just remember my overall paycheck, which is pretty good under the Glacier terms, was like $200 less. So I was just like, ah, well, I'm about the same then. It seems like, but we had a lot of fun with that, and nothing more fun than getting the opportunity to do something with our great friend, you know, Luther Biggs, and he was amazing in that role, and we were able to run with that for about a year. I wish we would have had a little bit longer with it, but you know, once again, the changing of the guard happened again at WCW, and then they didn't see it having any more legs after about a year, and so that kind of wound down. And but I will say, probably the greatest thing that ever came out of the Buzz Stern whole angle was, you know, I grew up, my two childhood heroes outside of my parents were Evel Knievel and Dusty Rhodes. I got a chance to meet Evel Knievel, which was awesome. But the way I, even though I'd been at WCW for a while, I really had not gotten to know Dusty, because I was really intimidated, like most people were of Dusty. And but Dusty was put in charge of producing all the Buzz Stern vignettes. And on that day, I was so, I will say, I humbly and proudly say this, I was so prepared. I had about six or seven, you know, vignettes that I had memorized, that I, and we shot about three or four, and we shot them all really quick, because, you know, I was, Luther and I were just ready. And so I remember Dusty being really impressed with that, and him saying, well, heck, we got some more time, because we were shooting at the new power plant at, where Paul was the head coach. And he said, you got anything else? I said, yeah, I got some more stuff. And so we shot more vignettes just based on the fact that I was ready. I was prepared. And I think that's where I really won Dusty over, that one day. And a great friendship was developed that day that lasted, you know, the rest of his life and for a long time for me.
That's awesome.
Hard work pays off, man. Hard work and being prepared paid off for you. And that's great. I love to hear those stories like that. Positive. He stayed positive through it all. I went through a little bit something similar to that with the end of Wrath, being out with an ACL injury for 6-7 months. You don't know what's happening behind the scenes. And of course, things were always changing, but you stayed the course there, Ray, and you were prepared. And that's it.
You know, Brian, and thank you, Brother Sam, but this is one thing I can say, Tom, that this is, I think, one of the reasons why our friendship started and it stayed where it is even today, but also with Canyon, you know, God bless him. I miss Canyon every day. I really do. Luther and I, we keep his memory alive every day with a lot of his sayings and stuff. But the thing was that all three of us, after the Blood Runs Cold thing kind of ran its course, the one thing that all, and I talk about this to any young wrestler who will listen, is the one thing that we all three did that kept us employed into the point to where we had another run in WCW while we were still at that whole top of the world during that time, is we were all very proactive. We saw that, okay, this one thing was going to have its run and then that was going to be over. What were we going to do next? And Brian went on to do all of the stuff that he did afterwards. Canyon was very proactive and pitched some great ideas, and he evolved from there. And I did the same thing with Buzz Stern, but none of that would have happened if we wouldn't have been proactive. If we'd have just sat and say, well, let's just see what they come up with for us. They probably would have come up with nothing for all of us, you know. So we all were very proactive because we had all developed a really good work ethic, and we just knew how the business is. If you sit around and wait, they're trying to write next week's show. They're not going to sit around and go home and think about what they can do with us next. So we were all proactive in that, and that's, I feel like, was a really good reason why we were all able to stay on board for as long as we did.
You were all proactive. You put your chips on the table, you bet on yourselves, and you went all in. Yeah. Absolutely incredible. And all in is a gorgeous segue to our next feature. Because as everything progresses in the world of professional wrestling, as we've just said, things come full circle, and Ray is now in a very prominent position working with All Elite Wrestling as one of their producers. And we've got a very big show coming up this weekend. Yes, it is the showcase that we've all been looking forward to. We're going all in Texas. That's Ray, right, talk baby. To us a little bit about how you became All Elite.
Yeah. You know what? Once again, I always go back to, you know, it's who's willing to say they know you, you know, and I feel like, once again, I feel I can say very humbly and proudly, I've built what I consider a resume I'm really proud of in the wrestling business. But I was at a position where I'd stepped away from wrestling several years ago. One of my very, very close friends, QT Marshall, he contacted me. He was living in Orlando with his wife, and they were already planning on moving to Atlanta, and he wanted to open up a wrestling school in Atlanta. Long story short, we ended up partnering together. He asked me to partner with him, and we started what was called the One Fall Power Factory in 2016. We moved to my good friend Chip Smith, who I mentioned earlier. Chip, who had gone on to become one of the most prominent sports performance coaches and trainers in the world. He's actually called the godfather of sports performance and very much known for his NFL combine training. He's trained thousands and thousands of some of the greatest names in NFL history. Most recently, Jalen Hurts, who's, you know, just won the Super Bowl and, you know, and has made people in Philly very proud. But he had this world-class NFL style facility, like 30,000 square feet with the best weight facility, best training facilities, everything you could imagine. And because Chip was willing to say he knew me, he allowed us to come into that facility and put our wrestling school there. We had four, we were able now to put four rings, build it up. And in the end of 2020, we brought on board Cody Rhodes. Cody came on board with us, and we rebranded the school as the Nightmare Factory. And so, of course, in around the fall of 2019, AEW was formed and started. And of course, Cody was one of the EVPs. QT came on as one of the main people behind the scenes. Eventually, QT would work himself up to where now he's a VP. And so I'd gone back. I'd moved back to Orlando once I met my beautiful fiance, Veronica, who she and I get married in October here, which I'm very excited about.
Woo!
But
yes, yeah, let's just applaud that right now.
Yeah, heck yeah, heck yeah. So because I fell head over heels for her and I knew I wanted to build a life with her, I told QT and Cody that I wanted to step away. I'd moved back to Atlanta, and I wanted to move back to Orlando, build a life with her, but still be able to go back and forth with the school. So I did that, but when I was here, I went back to teaching high school. I put my degree to work, and it was okay. I enjoyed teaching high school. I was teaching special ed here, and it was, you know, it was a nice steady paycheck, and it was rewarding in a lot of ways, but I really, really missed wrestling. I missed wrestling on more than I really thought I would. And so, about, I don't know, it was about a year and a half ago or so. It was fall before last. I just started kind of inquiring with QT about if there was ever a producer slash coach position that came open, I'd certainly like to be considered. And once again, Cody kind of handed me off to Sanjay Dutt. And Sanjay and I have been great friends since his days in Total Nonstop Action. And once again, Dusty had been brought on as the booker back then in 04. And he brought me on as one of the team. So through that, I got to know Sanjay. Never did I ever anticipate that 20 years later, Sanjay would be the one that would be instrumental in bringing me on board as a coach for AEW. And so I have a lot of people to thank, but QT and Sanjay in particular, for allowing me the opportunity. And I came on board, I finished out the school year, and came on about June of last year. So I've been on about a year now. And boy, I tell you what, I have really found my home. I mean, I didn't realize how much I really missed wrestling. I'm reminded how much I love it to my core. And it's a very rewarding thing to be able to go to work and give my input and my experience and know that I'm impacting, hopefully, the next generation of wrestling stars. And, just to be able to do that, a lot of people, go to work and they can't say that they really enjoy their job. I don't even consider this a job. I consider it a great opportunity every week that I get to go share what I've learned. And and a lot of the young talent there, they do listen and apply what we share with them. And and it's a cool thing. So this week is a big week. I leave tomorrow, and we got TV Wednesday, Thursday, and the Ring of Honor pay-per-view Friday, and then the big All In on Saturday. So I'm excited, man. I get to go be around wrestling for the whole next week and get paid for it, which is even better. So
let's applaud that. We'll go out your way wherever you are in the world this week. Check out Fight TV or Triller, where you can get all your AEW action. Become an AEW Plus subscriber. Download their content. Check out Dynamite, Collision, and Rampage. And make sure that you are all in on Saturday.
Amen. Heck yeah.
That's
Yeah, and here's the thing about here on the Meltdown, we love that we were working with some get some celebrities coming on. We got some MMA legends coming up, but at our core, we are pro wrestling. We've always embraced it. I'm like you, Ray, man. I miss it. I miss the guys. I miss the stories. So this is my little way of having the superstars and legends of, you know, yesterday and even current, like Brian Cage we just had. But yeah, it's just our way. Tom loves the business like I love it and like you love it. And so it's just a way for us to stay in touch and not just relive the glory days, but talk about the future and all the superstars that are coming. It's not just about the old days. It's current, you know, big time stories across the spectrum here. So that's some of the fun things we do at the Meltdown. Yeah. I want to segue this here. And Tom, tell me what you think about this. Now, you know, we've talked about Ray and his great pro wrestling, his great martial arts skills, but let's talk about this. Let's talk about his new action sci-fi thriller, Aliens. Hey, aliens and pro wrestlers. Yes, that's right. Where else are you going to get this combination? Okay. It's the Unbreakable Bunch, a superstar lineup with our buddy right here, the man, Ray Lloyd, Ming, Stan Hansen. I'm just going to name a few of the cast. Stan, yeah. Lariat Hansen, Ernest the Cat Miller, who was also on our show a few weeks back. Yeah, Larry Zbysko, Luther, the original Big Sexy. Yes, he's on there. Julia Denton, Dave Heath. The list goes on and on. But, Ray, I know that you were on this project from the very beginning. You were instrumental in doing it all. Tell us here at the Meltdown, tell us about the process. And I know it was a hell of an endeavor because I did a little Axeman thing a few years ago, and that was a ton of work. You know, this, you did this yourself. Tell me about it.
Yeah, you know what? I thank you know, my buddy Brennan Love, Luther Biggs. You know, but this was a concept that Luther had years ago, and about 10 years ago, we really started getting serious about, hey, you know what, man? Like, you know, there's not really a lot of good movies out there that, about professional wrestling that make you feel good about being a professional wrestling fan, you know? And a lot of times it's the dark side of the story or it's a very hokey version of what we do. And I know that all that stuff has its place, but so, you know, I give Luther all the credit in the world for coming up with the original concept. And about 7 years ago, we got really serious about it. We said, okay, let's, you know, and we knew nothing gets done until it really starts unless we get a script. So good friend of ours, John Waterhouse, wrote the original concept, the original draft of the first draft of the script. The story, of course, like any script, the story evolved a lot from that first original draft, but the general theme of it always stayed the same, which is a story about this group of pro wrestlers. And the theme of it is camaraderie, friendship, and loyalty. And those are things you don't really see in a movie that's about pro wrestlers, you know, and certainly not with a movie about aliens. Yeah. So I always say that the story we landed on is a combination of, it's the Magnificent Seven meets John Carpenter's They Live, which of course starred, you know, the great Roddy Piper. So you get an ensemble cast of professional wrestlers, and they get thrown into this world of what would it be like if they got thrown into they know the pro wrestling world. They know that backwards and forwards. What happens if they get thrown into this world of the sci-fi world where they had to battle aliens? They got to step out of their comfort zone and battle aliens. So the general story is, this group of wrestlers goes back on one final tour to raise money to help a friend of theirs who's in need. And it's the old story of, there's a kind of a ticking clock. They got to raise this amount of money by this certain amount of time. So they organize the tour. They go back to work for this promoter they all swore they'd never work for again. which was a great role played by an amazing actor, Adam Minarovich, who, for all the Walking Dead fans out there, Adam played the character of Ed, who was on the first two seasons. He was character Carol, I think, was the female character who was on the whole series, all 12 years. Yeah. So he was like the crazy husband on the first two seasons, who eventually got eaten by the aliens, or by the zombies. But he's an amazing actor, so the story is that, you know, the audience sees two parallel stories of us going on this tour and then this small town that gets invaded with this alien presence. Eventually we stop off on one of the day off on the tour. We stop off in that town. There's a festival going on. We end up in this big situation where we get thrown in the local jail, and eventually we have to break out of the jail and stand with the townspeople to take back the town. And so it's a really fun movie. It's a very family-friendly movie. We were really big on, we wanted to make a movie that the entire family could sit down on a Saturday night and watch. And I think we really did that. There's literally no profanity in the movie, no gross humor, no gore. Even though there's a lot of gunfire and explosions, it's action that is fun action, not violent action, as I like to say. And so it's a very fun ride, and it's something we're really, really proud of. And Luther and I both worked very, very hard on it. And every single wrestling legend that we asked to be in this, they hands down said yes, because they when they read the script, they saw how much of the reasons we were doing this, and we saw, and they all saw how it painted wrestling in a good light. They all wanted to be on board. And that was truly amazing in itself, that we got the cast of characters together that we did for the movie.
Well, if ever that work turned into a shoot, who would you want in your corner to fight some aliens than Haku, right?
It's Stan Hansen. Yeah, so, you know. So.
Yeah, you got to have Stan coming out there and laying a few lariats in. I mean, you know, what a great guy he is. Love Stan.
That's what awesome.
As we're chatting about this right now, Tom has lined this up. So a big ticker tape rolling across the bottom of your screen where you can find all this you want. Just follow the scroll here. You'll hook up. Tom is going to set it up, but we're going to plug this for you big time, Ray, because
thank you, bro. You put in the work.
Did.
I tell you, we did, because we love wrestling, and we made this movie for people who love wrestling like we love wrestling. And I think that it's an hour and a half long. It's not a real, real long movie. We did that by design. And like I said, when our editor, the first guy who worked on the original edit of the film, when he called me up afterwards, and I said, well, what do you think? He said, Ray, this really plays like a good Saturday night beer and pizza movie. I said, great. That's exactly what we want, you know? But for anybody who's obviously, I know you guys are putting up all the information, but you can just go to theunbreakablebunchmovie.com. That's the website that, once again, Robert McLaren, great friend of ours, who does all of Diamond Dallas Page's web design. He did the website as a gift to the project for us. It's a very fun website. It's got all the information, all the streaming services where you can see the movie. Please support the movie, because we're already in talks for making the second one. So we'd love to be able to make that next one. Just keep entertaining the wrestling fans with good wrestling stories.
Go out your way this week to find it, The Unbreakable Bunch movie. Find it, Google it, look at it, and absorb it, and just enjoy it, everything in your heart. So, as we go from wrestlers kicking the booties of aliens, we're going to segue into some of our game show features here on The Meltdown. Cool. And the first that we like to play is our very own Mount Rushmores. And speaking of butt kickers, that is what we're going to start off with Ray and Brian. So I'm going to pose it to Glacier first. Ray,
okay.
I'm going to come to you, brother. We are talking Mount Rushmore of martial artists in professional wrestling. And I'm going to see marry up with Brian in any way. So give us your four, and then I'll give you my little guess as to how many you're going to sing.
Okay.
Who are we talking
about? What? I would say, I mean, one, I'm obviously partial to one person in particular. My still one of my greatest friends and my former tag team partner WCW, Ernest the Cat Miller. I got to put Ernest on there, you know.
So, you got it right.
Yeah, because one, you know, he just he has a little bit of resemblance to Fred Sanford. And, you know, it'd just be kind of cool to see that up on Mount Rushmore. So. Yeah, and that's a long-standing joke with me and Brian and Cat, you know. So Cat does have some very legitimate credentials, and I feel like I say that. You know, yes, you know, I'm a little biased because of our friendship, but his resume stands on its own. Two, I would have to say Tonga, you know, Ming. I mean, he's about as real as it gets, you know. Just the fact, a lot of people don't know that he wrestled, you know, as a sumo wrestler, as a young teenager, from the island of Tonga. He got sent to Japan. I think he was like, 15 years old and going to compete against some of the best sumo wrestlers at that age. I mean, he's just been a lifelong martial artist, and he's just one of the most humble people you ever want to meet. But you definitely would want him in your corner if anything goes sideways. I'd say Ernest, Tonga. I'm just thinking off the top of my head. The third one that I feel like goes up there, and I, once again, I speak mostly from my experience in my era, But the one person who I had the honor of wrestling my first big TV match against way before I became Glacier. This was in the summer of 89 when I was kind of a little bit of a faceless opponent, we'll say, up in WCW. I had the chance to work with the Great Muta. It was my first TV match. And I would, so I'd have to put Muta on there, you know? And then I would say number four, just because I never really got to know this man real personally, but I did get a chance to get to know him in Japan and work with him. Because he was a legitimate Olympian in judo, I would have to say, Bad News Allen, Bad News Brown, you know? So those are my four. There's a lot. I mean, I would also want to say, Hiro Matsuda, who was big in Florida Championship Wrestling back in the day, but I know we can only pick four. So, those would be my top four, I think.
That's an epic four, right? That is awesome. Look at that. That is like a rogues gallery. That is like a police lineup right there. Look at that.
Yeah.
Ernest Miller, Meng, Gray Muta, Bad News Brown with Hiro Matsuda sat on the sidelines. Wow. Brian, I'm saying you've got two the same. Let's see if I'm right. Let's bend it over to the creation of devastation.
All right, Tomcat. This is always such a fun segment because, like Ray, I'm sure Ray probably looked back through and I said, who's the superstar in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s? It's so tough to pick four. It really is because I could pick 14. But I'm going to go with my four. And again, I've actually only worked with one of these guys, and I'm going to hit you with it. No particular order, okay? And this is just from what, again, my opinion. All right, here we go. Steve Blackman.
Oh, yes, man. Wow, I totally forgot about Steve, yes.
It's easy. It's easy. There's so many. Ernest the Cat Miller.
Okay. The Cat.
Rob Van Dam.
Yeah, that's amazing, Pete.
And number four, with a little bit of the current product, Malakai Black.
Oh. Yo, yeah.
So,
Malakai's the real deal, man. I love watching him. I love watching him. I'd love to get to know him at AEW because, he's very, very legitimate, and that's what I've always liked too. But anyone who does martial arts in the wrestling world, I just feel like your main thing is you've got to look legitimate. You got to look legitimate because if you don't, it's just it ruins a lot of the magic for one, for what we do in our business. But two, it's just the ones who are legitimate. It's very easy to watch them because because our commentators, that's their job to educate the audience on what these guys can do, and then you get to see them actually put that to work in the ring and marry that with pro wrestling skills. It's a really cool thing to watch.
Yeah. And I can vouch personally from my personal jaw. I can vouch that Ray is legitimate because I remember he knocked me out on my feet with a phenomenal kick. Ray is legit, ladies and gentlemen. Just for the record, I'm going on record and saying, it was close, man.
Whew. It was close. Oh yeah. Well, honestly, like I said, man, I certainly wouldn't put myself on the Mount Rushmore, but I always said too, that was my main thing was when we first took all this on. I'm sure Brian remember. Like I was just so, I always say like, I always tell younger talent like you got to know why you're doing this. You got to find out what your why is. You got to be very specific why you're doing this. And when I was in WCW, one of my main whys was, there's a lot of people depending on me. As far as doing this Glacier gimmick to make it look authentic, make it look legit. And Eric being the main one, and because he was a martial artist. And there were martial artists watching all over the world when we debuted. So I had to be like, okay, this stuff, my stuff's got to marry well with pro wrestling. Because if it doesn't, boy, I'm going to really hear it, So right. Yeah, it was very important for us to look legit, and that's hard to do. It's hard to do in pro wrestling to throw your foot up in the air, hit someone on the chest or the head or whatever, and still make it where it looks good enough for the audience, but to protect each other. I mean, it's a really, really hard thing to do. Really hard thing to do.
Well, Brian likes to work snug, don't you, brother? We're all good.
I do. I do. I will admit it. Yes. That's me.
You're a star. Well, I seem to be staring at the ceiling because I got that wrong. I didn't go over. I took the loss.
Ha.
I went for two and we only got one. Never mind. We're all good. Let's see. I'll put it down on the L bracket of my win sheet. But you guys, what a foursome from either of you. That's epic. And the visuals that we're going to throw up for that
Oh,
are
yeah.
going to look tremendous. What a great Mount Rushmore. Well, keeping on with the vibe of our game show, and that's what we're around. We're around just throwing out these random things to our wonderful guests. Comes to our next part of the show, which is Winner Stays On. So, Ray, I hope you're ready for this because
Okay.
it might be time to throw some people under the bus. I'm going to
Oh.
throw out two different, in this particular instance, two different moves operated by two different superstars. You're going to keep
Okay.
one and you're going to drop one. And then
Okay.
we're going to go on to the next name. And the topic that we are looking at with our very own Glacier, we're going. But winner stays on best kicks in professional wrestling.
Right.
Glacier, are
Okay.
you ready?
I hope so. I hope so. I'm
Let's
not
go,
going to
brother,
throw
because we're
anybody
going
under
to
the bus.
start off strong. We're going old school with this one. Chris
Okay.
Adams super kick or the Young Bucks super kick party?
Oh man, gosh. Oh.
Not gonna be easy, Ray. This is gonna
No,
be
it's not gonna
tough.
be easy.
It's gonna be fun. It's gonna be tough. Yeah. Told you,
I
Brian works
snug.
I enjoy and I've really enjoyed getting to know the Bucks, which I didn't even know until I watched the Dark Side of the Ring episode by Canyon that they knew Canyon. I didn't know that, you know?
Oh.
And I enjoy watching them work. I mean, I think it's always fun to me to see. I always try to imagine a little bit of my brother and I, my twin brother. I mean, how much fun could it be to have a career with your brother, you know, and be out there and traveling and getting to do that? So I love the fact that all the stuff they do is I think they really, kind of they evolved wrestling as far as tag team wrestling and just with some of the stuff that they do, just the athleticism that's out there today is just amazing to me. But I will have to say, just because it's my era and I've never. Not yet have I experienced, the kicks from the Bucks, but I have experienced the kick from gentleman Chris Adams several times. And because we had two decent little feuds in WCW. Both of them were on the Saturday night show. So I got to work with Chris a good. They'll do a lot of house shows with him. So I got to experience Chris's firsthand. And I will say, it was it's always looked good. At times it was snug, So only because I've experienced one over the other, I'll go with Chris
We're going to keep Chris Adams super kick party has gone. Excellent.
Adams.
Right, these are going to come thick and fast. So we
Sure,
just need
gotcha.
like
Just
just
a quick
whatever
answer.
comes
Gotcha.
into
Okay.
your head. Bang, bang, bang,
Gotcha.
bang, bang. So,
Okay.
let's ask you that again. Let's kick it off.
Okay.
Super kick party, Chris Adams super kick.
Only because I've experienced Chris Adams firsthand, Chris
Boom.
Adams.
Super kick versus Sheamus's bro kick.
Ah, man, super kick. I gotta go with super kick.
Super kick. Or Meng and the Barbarians' Kick of Fear.
Kick of fear. I'm not going against Ming.
Yes, I do.
Kick of Fear or Malakai Black's Black Mass.
Malachi, respective. I ain't going against Ming.
We
Kick of fear.
might have a Randy Orton and Otto Von's right here. Okay.
Yes,
Meng
it's
and
possible.
Barbarians' Kick of Fear or Swerve Strickland's House Call.
Oh, well, sort of I love you, but once again, I'm gonna stay with a kick of fear.
He's gone. Meng and Barbarian or Trish Stratus's chick kick.
Don't make me do that. Trish says she's a whole lot better looking than all of us, but I gotta go with still gotta go with Ming and Barb.
Keeping on with the boys.
Wow,
Excellent. Meng the Barbarian or Drew McIntyre's Claymore.
man.
Let's
The
go.
Claymore is awesome, but
Yes.
I gotta stay with I gotta stay with Ming. I gotta stay with Ming.
Kick of Fear. Or sweet chin music.
That one is the most iconic for sure, but I gotta stay loyal to my man Ming.
Sorry, Sean. That smile has gone. The kick of fear or Tajiri's buzzsaw kicks.
Oh man. Oh man. Oh, I gotta stay with Ming. I just gotta stay
Okay.
with Ming.
Kick of fear or Daniel Bryan Danielson's yes kicks.
Gosh, man, I love Brian too. Still got to stay with Ming. Still got to stay with Ming.
Love it. Oh, this could be it. He's got a talking death
He's
grip
on a
on you.
roll, man. He's on
The
a roll.
kick of fear or Randy Orton's punt?
Ah, man. Oh, I still got to stay with Ming. Still got to stay with the kick of fear. Still got to stay
It's
with the
the
kick of fear.
last one.
This is it.
The one
This
that
is
means
it.
the most. Are they going all the way? It's the kick of fear or Glacier's Ryonic kick.
Oh man. You know what? I'm throwing myself off the bus. I still gotta go with Ming. Because he's the man. I say he's the baddest cat in the jungle. But he's the nicest, sweetest guy you ever want to know too.
I would have done the same thing, Ray. Just so you know, I've had that. We both experienced that, so we know.
You don't want to poke the tiger, right? That's right. There's no power like Ming. I mean, there's just not even a close second. And I mean that in all honesty. I'm not exaggerating one bit. But really, I mean, he's in a class all by himself.
Yes, he is the class.
Yes.
That is
but
amazing.
What I always want to say, emphasize, the nicest, sweetest man you ever want to know. He really is. I think all the guys who are the true guys, the true, truly tough guys in our industry, they've all been like that. You know, I've never known the tough guys to be the troublemakers. You know, the tough
True.
guys are always the guys like, yeah, I know I'll take care of business if I have to. But Ming definitely sits atop all the hill of all the bad guys. He still sits atop of that hill.
It really does. We're hoping to secure him as a guest in the future here on the Meltdown. I know Brian's
been
in touch
awesome.
With him as of late. So
we
I
have
think
a call
things
in.
Are coming.
Yeah.
That's good.
It ain't easy. Booking ain't easy, brother. We know it.
To get him on to talk about the movie. Talk about the movie.
Oh, we will.
He had a great role in the movie, and it was great to have him in the film because I feel like that Tonga could have had a career in movies even way before ours, and it was really great. I think it was great for the wrestling audience to see that he has a lot of layers to his talents as well. Other than just being the big, strong, you know, Ming Haku. And people really get to see it in the movie. You really get to see the more tender side of him and the more, you know, human side of all the wrestlers in the movie, which is really why we put it out there to like I said, the people that love wrestling the way we love. So go see the Unbreakable Bunch.
Yes, we are going to plug it big time and make sure that everyone gets a shot at seeing it because it is great. And Ray has put together a who's who of legends in this movie. So do not miss it.
Definitely go out your way and smash it. Very quickly, just before we put a nice big bow on this amazing Meltdown Monday that we've had with you, Ray, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh,
I'm going to give
you
three very, very quick fire questions.
Okay.
And this is
okay.
our Meltdown Moments section.
Okay.
So it's
quick
your
fire.
Favorite,
okay.
and it's whatever comes into your head, boom, you've got to tell us.
You
it
got
just
it.
Gives our viewers and our listeners a little bit more insight into you and makes them feel a little bit more at home, a little bit closer to you. Let's
Amen.
See.
Let's do
how
it.
Well we do. Meltdown Moments with Ray Glacier Lloyd. Favorite movie?
Ah, gosh, my all-time favorite movie, Rocky.
Good one.
The shot of saying the Unbreakable Bunch right there.
Yeah.
Meltdown Moments.
Yeah, outside the Unbreakable.
Favorite
outside,
band?
Outside the Unbreakable. Favorite band? Oh, my gosh. Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Good one. We are going
from Jacksonville,
Sweet Home,
Florida.
Alabama. And favorite holiday destination?
Orlando, Florida, baby. I live it every day.
Yeah.
Old sweet home.
Yeah. Old sweet home.
I'll be coming. I'll be coming next year for you, man. I'll be coming. We can't wait. It's my happy place, too.
I will say that, you know, the main reason why I came to Orlando to originally start was because we used to film at Universal Studios during our WCWAs. And I remember, even though I didn't grow up that far from Orlando, I grew up in Georgia, I'd never been to Orlando that much. And I really fell in love with the city of Orlando and everything that it has to offer, not just the theme parks and all that. And I remember I made a goal to myself, kind of a quiet goal that I literally said, one day, you know, if I can live in Orlando one of these days, I will kind of feel like I kind of made it. You know, and back in 04, my first time I moved to Orlando, and it felt like that, and it feels like that still today, that I'm a little bit kind of down here in paradise, and a little hot, humid version of paradise, but still paradise. So I'm very, very happy down here.
We can't wait to come back. Those steak
tips. Yes, come see me.
At the Longhorn Steakhouse. Do it for me every time, brother. We love it.
Yes.
Oh, Brian, what a show, man.
Yeah, first, Ray, as we wrap up episode 14, we want to congratulate you on your engagement.
Thank you, bro. Thank you.
Here at the Meltdown, wish you success, joy, and happiness, my friend.
Thank you, sir.
And just so you know, you and Veronica are always welcome here in Tucson, Arizona. If you want to do some if you want to do some horseback riding and visit a bygone era, come visit the bygone era out here in the Old West, my friend. Just so you know, hey, absolutely. We appreciate you.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you so much for coming on, man.
Thank you, man. I value our friendship so much, man. It's rare when you can say, you know, that you've had someone you consider a good friend for 30 years. And so it just means the world to me, brother. I'm so happy for you. I'm so proud of you. I love you as a friend, man, and as a human being. I'm very grateful that we have the ability to and the opportunity to do this, you know, at this point in our lives. That means a whole lot to me, brother. I hope you know it.
I do, man. And then right back at you, my friend. We really, truly appreciate you. I appreciate you. The fans are going to love this. They're going to love the new movie.
Yes.
We have got so many workings going on, possibly some title run toys. There's so many layers to this that are just nothing but good, positive, great high road, positive things we do here on the Meltdown. And again, we're just glad you're part of it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, bro. Thank you so much. I'm very proud to be a part of it. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ray. Nothing but continued success for a man
that made
my childhood epic and a little bit colder. Ladies and gentlemen, as he gets ready to go all in this weekend, we're wrapping our arms around a legend. He is the one and only Glacier. It's Ray Lord!
Thank you, guys. Thank you so much.
Well, from a chilly start, we have really warmed up and we are truly melting down. Thank you so much to the legend that is Ray Lloyd, our very own Glacier, slid in with his ice pick and his cryonic kick and knocked us into next week. All of you go and check out his movie. Make sure you get in there this weekend with AEW's All in Texas. And check out exactly what Ray's doing right now. And speaking of what people are doing right now, I'm going to put my hand into the Meltdown mailbag. And for those of you that have yet to send us questions, all you need to do is drop us a little message on Instagram. Follow us at The Meltdown Official. Get your questions lined up for the nuclear blast that is the creation of devastation. Brian Clark is going to be taking your questions. We pull out two per week, and we like to spread them across the world. We've had everything from the US to Adelaide, Australia last week.
Yes.
Today, we're going to bring it home to my side, and we're going to bring it home to your side. And speaking as we're talking about bringing it home to your side, I just want to share just something really special. We look at the analytics as to where people are listening to our show, viewing our show on YouTube.
Like it.
And one real distinct listener checked us out on Spotify while sat on a boat fishing in Lake Michigan. If that was you, brother, get in touch because that's epic. Yes, out on the water, Meltdown in your ears. Love that and love you. Thank you so much for being a part of the Meltdown universe and family. So let's open up the Meltdown mailbag. Our first question comes from Liam Galloway in Seattle, Washington. And Liam's going to go all WWF on us. Whilst working as Adam Bomb in the WWF, did you have a preference as to whether or not the character was a babyface or a heel?
Oh, good question. Thank you. We've got Seattle, the Pacific Northwest. You know, we love getting questions from around the world. So please send in your questions on Instagram and we will answer those. Heel or face? It sort of went through a progression. Of course, I started as a heel and then I turned, and I just preferred being a face, but just a baby face, just because that's just sort of my natural vibe, my natural persona. I love interacting with the fans. I still do to this very day. I we're doing this show for you guys. That's just who I am. My core is I love people and I love the interaction and I love the fan interaction. So again, great question, but I would have to say being a good guy.
Baby facing it all up and throwing some bombs into the crowd. Oh yeah, brother. Take me back, take me back. I loved it. 90, end of 94, early 95, and bomb, beautiful. And some incredible attires as well. I'm going to flash them up on screen. Great question. Thank you so much to Liam in Seattle. And moving from the US, we're going to take a trip across the pond, my side. Lee Oliver in the UK. Thank you so much for sending us a message, Lee. What is the weirdest thing someone has ever asked you to sign?
Oh, good question, Lee. Lee is a longtime supporter of this show, a longtime supporter of all my social media, including the TikTok. But we are, of course, focusing all of our efforts right here on our YouTube channel, The Meltdown. So thank you, Lee Oliver. Great question. I gotta be careful with this one. No, honestly, I'll tell you, Lee, I have signed some body parts. But appropriate. I mean, for example, if a lady were asked me for a signature, I would not. Maybe it would be upper chest. I've signed arms, hands, even though, of course, they this and this, and I would sign their merchandise if they want. That's probably the strangest place I would have to say was a woman's upper chest area. That's, I've never signed a baby or
It can
anyone.
happen.
I know, but yeah, that would probably be, and that's not very often, honest. I mean, it happened in my career. I did sign a few, but yeah, nothing really, nothing
That's
really,
pretty
nothing,
cool
nothing
though,
like,
right? Signing body parts. I mean,
no one's asking for a lock of hair or anything like that. Nothing like that.
who'd do that? Who'd do
I
that?
don't know. I
Who'd
tell you, I
do
don't
that?
know. I just saying, But great question.
Love it.
Thank you. Thank you, Lee. We appreciate that.
Have you ever seen a tattoo of anybody that has asked you for a signature?
No, but I think our last show or the show before we did put up a lot of, there's some Wrath tattoos, some Adam Bomb
Oh,
tattoos.
yes,
Yeah,
they're
but
awesome.
fans do that as a tribute. I'm blessed and honored. Thank you so much for doing those cool things. Hey, it's you can do what you want, but I think it's very, very cool.
Flattering. You flatter me.
Yes, that's the word we're looking for.
Love
Yes.
it. Well, you guys flatter me each and every week by joining us here on The Meltdown. It's been an absolute pleasure as always. And we've got some big guests lined up for our future shows. It is going to be a beautiful journey with you all. I don't want to divulge because we have got an absolute veritable array of mega talent coming up in the month of July and beyond. So stick with us. For those of you that have yet to subscribe, please head to YouTube, check out at Real Brian Clark. There you can subscribe and click that notification bell to let you know when our brand new shows are coming out. Hit us up on Instagram at Brian Clark 3X Champ and at Tom Finkiel. You can also check out our official Meltdown page on Instagram at The Meltdown Official. Check out Brian on TikTok, on us on Facebook, and on X. Anywhere that you want to get your social media fix, The Meltdown will be there. From me here in Manchester to him over there in AZ, it's been a pleasure being with you. I'm going to bat it over there for Brian to wrap everything up. It's been a pleasure, as always.
Thank you, Tomcat. Another great episode. Episode 14, Ray Glacier Lloyd, the Unbreakable Bunch movie.com. I mean, he has so many things going on, including a huge event, AEW in Texas. A lot of shows coming up this week. He flies out tomorrow. Wish him nothing but safe travels. And again, congrats on the engagement, my man. We really enjoyed having you here today. So again, from us here at the Meltdown, thank you so much for joining each and every Monday. We will be back next Monday doing what we do best, breaking necks and cashing checks. We will see you then.